Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
The Bernstein and McKnight Show.
I get a kick out of you guys. Get after somebody because you're trying to hold them accountable. I don't know what kind of business you're in, but I'll tell you what, if I was the head of a newspaper and you didn't do your job, you'd be held accountable. That's the way it is.
Middays on the Score.
And if somebody in an office building laid hands on somebody and yelled at them like that, they would be dealing with HR,
probably.
Coach. Shannon Ryan is on Twitter at S. Ryan Tribune. The Tribune's college basketball reporter joins us on the Alpamonte Ford hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. So before we get into Tom Izzo and short fashion and all of that, Shannon, that's not my concern. Take us through the saga of the bag of potato chips, please.
Oh. I know, it's a big mystery, right?
Right.
It just summed up, I tweeted it, and it just summed up sports reporters. So I think every sports reporter can relate. It's just, they're a hungry bunch, I guess. And yeah, someone ate my chips.
So now you,
in Des Moines.
You had the chips, and it was, it's your spot in the press room, right? Your established spot.
It was clear somebody was sitting there and someone else had eaten them. It's a huge mystery and it's a huge scandal. So someone's got to get to the bottom of this.
Who does that?
A sports reporter.
Yeah, that's who does that. That's who does that.
Oh, well, that sucks. I was vicariously displeased because I know exactly how I the violation that is. That's a foul. You don't do that.
I'm just more offended at the type of people we are. So, yeah.
Hungry people in search of free things. I get it. It's no big deal. So that we've been talking a little bit about the Tom Izzo situation with Aaron Henry and Cassius Winston in a conversation. I know Michigan State has that next game in Des Moines. They'll take on Minnesota. Your thoughts on Izzo and his, I guess, career leading up to, you know, a moment where he says, I'm not changing what I'm doing. This is who I am.
Yeah, I mean, I'm surprised. I guess just because it's on TV and it's March Madness and the TV catches him yelling at a guy. But if you watched any, you know, Tuesday night Big Ten game, you might have seen him doing the same exact thing. He's been doing this for years. I think every player that goes to Michigan State probably knows they're going to get chewed out pretty harshly at times. I don't think, like, I saw someone say, like, he's, you know, was like kind of acting like he's threatening to like hurt the kid or something. I didn't see it that way. And I think if you're around that program, and you know, I also think like I've seen this, that every coach in America do this. I mean, I think coaching's tamed down a little bit in ways. I mean, we don't have like the Bobby Knights so much anymore of like throwing the chairs and, or, you know, when that happens and it's exposed that those coaches, you can't put a hand on a player. I understand that. But I didn't see it as him crossing some line, or I didn't see it as him just like it was totally out of character. It was this crazy moment. I think anyone who's played sports has been yelled at like that or worse than that. I think it was the moment of it being caught during the NCAA tournament on a CBS camera.
Do you think that the level at which he got, or the level to which he got, was fairly normal or blown up just a little bit because they're in a tight one against a 15 seed at all?
Yeah, I mean that probably has something to do with it, but I mean, I think people have seen him mad. And if you talk to the people who have covered Michigan State for years too, it's a program where players give it back sometimes. And I mean, that was kind of happening in the huddle there where you saw him like stand up. So it's, you know, it's a program where I think there's the communication level is very open. Players, you know, will say things back to him that people are yelling at each other sometimes. But, you know, in that same press conference, he's afterward when he's saying, you know, I don't care about my bads and you got to be held accountable. And he's, you know, praising the team too for having the, I guess, gumption and be able to stick that game out.
But being the guy who has done it, it doesn't necessarily, it's not like he's grandfathered in. It doesn't necessarily, I mean, the larger, it's clear that 10 years from now, somebody doing that is really going to look like a dinosaur. You know, we know that probably, that there's a way to talk to these younger and younger players. And maybe, I guess, yeah. As I say that, Shannon, maybe it's going to change if and when the NBA changes its rules. And you have more juniors and seniors. And you look at the way Eric Musselman interacts with a team of seniors. They look older. They carry themselves older. Maybe that'll change the dynamic a little bit. It's just, it's still a little jarring now to see old man and young player and see that kind of interaction.
Yeah, I guess, you know, when he was saying that anyone at their jobs is held accountable, but people aren't screamed at necessarily that way. I get that. And then it brings up the whole thing about this being a job and that, but that opens another can of worms. But, I mean, I don't know. I just think anyone who's played sports, you get yelled at. To me, it wasn't a scandal. I think coaches have gotten so much better about how they do talk to players. And I think Izzo's probably evolved in some ways in that. You probably didn't see it yesterday, but just that there is more of a two-way street, or there is more, let me, you know, find out what's going on with their mindset and what's the best way to, you know, some guys you got to push their buttons, some guys you got to lay off. I think the best coaches kind of know which players you can do that to as well.
Is that the best game Bradley's played all season?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, that just blew my mind yesterday watching that. I kept thinking, okay, well, they go on that little run, they're hyped up at the beginning, and they're you know, they're in the moment, and I thought, okay, this is going to last 5 minutes. And they stuck it through. I mean, the five-minute mark around there, they still were in that game. It was shocking to me just because of who they were playing. First of all, a team like much bigger, Michigan State, much deeper, much more experienced, just one of the most elite programs in the country. And Bradley was this team that was in the middle of a very mediocre Missouri Valley, and watching them in the Missouri Valley Conference, they were, you know, they'd go like 4 or 5 minutes without scoring and missing layups, and they just looked like a completely different team yesterday.
Did Michigan State underwhelm, though? Where are they? Where is that performance informing your prospects for them now? Is that just one they kind of start out, get that out of the way and get the machine oiled up a little bit, or are they more beatable than perhaps you thought?
Well, it's interesting because when you look at the Big Ten tournament, and this is kind of a gripe some of those coaches have, is that they're playing in that Sunday game. If you make the long run, yeah, you want to win that, of course, but you're playing, you know, four games or more if you're, you know, not getting the byes. And these players, like, oh, I think Winston played 38 minutes. I mean, a lot of those players were playing really long minutes, even though they're a pretty deep team. So I think part of them were a little bit gassed, but it does. I mean, they've had really bad. It's remarkable, first of all, for Michigan State to be playing as well as they have, to have beaten Michigan, which I think is such an outstanding team, to have beaten them three times this year, to win the Big Ten regular season and the conference tournament, when they've had the talent that they lost last year, plus having to deal with the injury to Nick Ward and Langford being out, and for them to keep playing this way. But I still think, obviously, watching that game, they looked vulnerable. But I think even during the season, like, I was surprised how well they play against Michigan and kept beating them when I felt like they had stretches this year. They just looked like a more vulnerable team. So I don't know, looking at that side of that region, I mean, I don't have them as a they might have to play Duke. They might not even get that far. I mean, Minnesota played pretty well yesterday, but I would see them in a showdown with Duke, and I couldn't see them getting past Duke.
Talking with Shannon Ryan, talking hoops. You can follow her on Twitter at @SRyanTribune. Can you help me, Shannon, understand Purdue a little bit better? They've been tough to watch, or tough to understand all season long. Carson Edwards is the guy that can shoot you into or out of a game, and he kind of tried doing both against Old Dominion yesterday. How am I supposed to feel about the Boilermakers?
Yeah, I feel the same way watching them. And I think that's the thing this year. You see, Matt Painter just did an outstanding job, too, with the type of players they lost year. And so much of, I think, how they do is going to ride on Carson Edwards and putting it on his shoulders. And they have a player, Eastern, who's hurt, and his status is a little iffy. So I think that makes them a little vulnerable. They'll be playing Villanova, which I thought Villanova played a really tight game too against St. Mary's yesterday. But I don't know. I think it was great. I mean, you saw the Big Ten win all five games yesterday, but I don't know that I see a Big Ten team in my Final Four. I couldn't see Purdue going too much farther. But now that I said that, they'll probably be a Final Four team or something.
Yeah, of course.
We were having fun with the piece that you wrote about the changes in fashion in basketball with length of shorts going back to when the way it used to be, the basketball I grew up with. Damn it. It was great to hear how openly some of the players talked about it, too. It's like they wanted to be asked about it. It's like, yeah, if you got hops to show off, it's better show them a little bit more leg.
That's what one of them said. The guys want to show their legs now. They're athletic and they feel better in these uniforms. But yeah, it's just like the last couple of years I kept noticing like the rolled down shorts look, and I'm like, that's how I used to wear my shorts in the 90s. But now you see all these college basketball players doing it, and I think, I don't know, to me it's always interesting just because I think I don't know, for some reason basketball, I mean, you remember the baggy shorts, it was such a hot topic, and
oh, yeah,
it had all these implications carrying with it, and changed dress codes, and I mean, it was huge. And then now you see these guys just like hiking up their shorts as short as can be, which was like the dorkiest thing in the world, and now it's cool again. So I don't know, just a little fun story. But the guys, yeah, I asked them about it, and they would just light up, and people would come over and start chiming in about it in the locker room. So yeah, they love the short shorts.
Are we headed for like high socks too with the leggings and everything? I feel like we're on the precipice of a very different fashion here in the NCAA.
No, I learned that you're supposed to push down your socks a little bit, like leave them a little bit scrunch. I learned so much of how to dress cool as a basketball player, I guess. So, yeah, that's the way. It's very specific, though. There's a lot. It's sort of interesting how much thought they actually put into it.
How much Ja Morant buzz are you detecting where you are and among the people covering the tournament where you are?
Yeah, I mean, I think for people who cover or really enjoy college basketball all season long, it's actually really fun to see everyone recognizing him and talking about him. Just like one of the most exciting players. I mean, everyone's talking about him, and just even with another reporter yesterday, I was talking about just how, you know, Zion Williams has brought so much buzz to the tournament or to the college basketball this year, and, you know, what a dominant player he is. But then on the other side, just, you know, who would you rather watch? In some ways, Ja Morant is just such an exciting player in a totally different way, but just what he can do, the way he creates plays, the assists, just the explosiveness and driving to the hoop. There's so many things he can do, and what his future would be in the NBA versus Zion's future in the NBA. It's kind of fun to talk about that. I mean, I had that Marquette Murray State game circled as a game I wanted to watch, and Marquette definitely disappointed, but you know, you saw these two elite guards who were, you know, a showdown of them. But yeah, Morant is just, he's so fun to watch. So it's great for the tournament to have a guy like him play well on a big stage. That's what's fun about this, is then you get to know these guys and you get to hear new names and see players you've never heard of. And then, you know, you're probably excited to see them in the NBA one day, or, you know, you know so much more about them and excited to watch them.
Three Big Ten games today, Shannon. It is Ohio State and Iowa State, Wisconsin and Oregon, and Michigan and Montana. Any one of those?
Iowa and Cincinnati.
Oh, yeah, my mistake. Iowa and Cincinnati. I was looking at the wrong side of the bracket. Any one of those more exciting for you than the others?
I'm interested to see the Wisconsin-Oregon game, just because Wisconsin, these three, I mean, yesterday I feel like all of those Big Ten teams were pretty well favored, or you weren't too surprised. Yeah. I feel like these are going to be much closer games. And really, they're all interesting. I mean, Wisconsin, they've been up and down, but it'd be great to see Ethan Happ, an Illinois kid, go further in the tournament. I mean, he's such a great player. You feel like he kind of deserves to go far and be the star as a senior against an Oregon team that got really hot in their conference tournament. And I think, I mean, Ohio State, too, has been really interesting. So much of how they played depends on their big man, Caleb Wesson. And Iowa State's interesting team, too, and they have a local guy, Talen Horton Tucker, who there was some drama there about his recruitment at Illinois. So, I mean, but I think all in Iowa, too, I mean, if they're shooting threes, they can be fantastic, and they've got some talent, but sometimes they just seem like they don't show up. So, I mean, all three of those games I feel like could be either ors today.
Shannon, thank you very much. We appreciate it. I know it's a very busy time for you, and glad you had a few moments for us.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
That is Shannon Ryan of the Chicago Tribune. Very, very busy this time of year.
Yeah, I mean, I guess with the Izzo-Aaron Henry thing, it is what it is. Izzo gets, I think, from those who cover him, those who watch a lot of Michigan State basketball, he gets the benefit of the doubt, I guess, for being the guy he's always been, for having been that coach for 25, 30 years. I don't know whether that's right or wrong. I really don't. But that's the guy he's been, and I suppose for the kids who attend Michigan State, there is an expectation set when they arrive, when they take that scholarship and then leave after 6 months. You know, I mean, I can understand it. I still don't have to like what it looked like. You know, I mean, you had a teammate pull a coach away from another teammate. Not off. I don't mean to make this more dramatic than it was. They didn't nearly come to blows.
It was very dramatic.
But there's also clearly a history behind Izzo and Henry. There's also clearly, I mean, there was a come to Jesus meeting at some point in the season. What came out of that is known by those two, probably their teammates as well. But when there's a history involved there, it's weird to see. It seemed weird to see an altercation like that happen again.
I've been around all kinds of coaches in all kinds of sports, and what bothers me is the assumption that to hold someone accountable, you have to do that. You know what you do? You give some. So I've been around coaches. All they need to do is give a look and point to a seat on the bench, and there's your accountability.
Mm.
And you don't get back in the game.
Yeah. I would imagine you have to establish that, though, right? I mean, that has to begin from the beginning of your coaching, if not career, then like your tenure with that player.
There's also, I've seen...
Depends on precedent.
I've seen classic good cop, bad cop arrangements. And if you watch what happened in that particular moment, the altercation is interrupted, and then he turns to an assistant coach.
Yeah.
And I don't know which assistant that was, but very often on these staffs... And they know who they are, and I don't know how much they even sort of talk about it, but you have that assistant who can say, hey, Tom didn't, that's not what he meant, or he doesn't hate you, he's just trying to get the most out of you, you know how much he cares about you, and there is that other coach in that role to jump in and make you feel better.
Mm-hmm.
And there are other coaching staffs that go with united front, sort of the whole parental thing. You know, when my wife and I would say, "Don't you know,
ask your mother?
You can't let the you can't let the kids play one off the other." Well, mom said this, I would say this. Look, if one says it, that's it. And even if I don't necessarily agree with a parenting choice, I'm not going to undermine it.
United front,
right? We'll deal with that on our own.
Sure,
later.
Sure. That's when the kids are at school or at camp or whatever.
Sure, we'll figure out that decision, but. There's a way of handling these things on staffs over time. And I realize that it also depends on the age of the coach, where Mike Krzyzewski always had an old guy next to him. Always. Always had that guy, that veteran presence next to him. And it's sort of modeled off of, you know, the Bill Guthridge thing that was, you know, Dean Smith and all that, where these coaches realized as they got older, they became the old guy, and now they needed the opposite of that. And that's when Mike Krzyzewski started having all the young guys next to him because he realized he didn't need the old guy anymore. And college coaching staff should have a dynamic that is consistent where a player, as long as the player isn't surprised by it, player knows what he's getting into, the parents of the player know what he's getting into. Some guys might function better, but the where and when matters. Hmm. Whether it's in the coach's office, it's different. It's different. Getting yelled at a practice, getting pulled off a practice floor, and getting yelled at is very, very different than in the middle of a game on national television.
Everyone is aware that those cameras are on,
right,
and that this is in fact March Madness, and everyone's watching. And why it's got to feel bad to be yelled at like that.
Mm-hmm.
Not saying you can't get over it. Not saying he shouldn't, as a player, get over that and go play. He hit a couple of buckets afterward, but in the moment, that hurts. Really hurts.
Mm-hmm. It's no fun, but it's. I've been around Izzo in quiet moments. I've been around, you know, covering him in the heat of games, and I do understand where he's coming from. And I have an affinity for old school basketball coaches.
You do. You love the salty, crusty bastards.
That's how I learned the game.
That's your favorites.
That's how I learned the game.
Yeah.
I've also seen players change. I also now, as a parent of two teenagers, know how we understand more the effect that verbal abuse has on kids.
Hmm.
We know more. It's we have settled science.
Yeah, not just. I mean, you're not saying you and like people.
We as people, we as
the collective,
parents, teachers, anybody who has young people in our lives, we better understand what some of the effects on psychological development from some of that verbal abuse, and none of it's good.
312-644-6767. You want to talk tournament. That's what we are doing up until the first couple of games tip. We got the midway coming around in a little while as well. We'll talk baseball with Jonah Carey at 1040. Did you see the handful of extensions for players that came out yesterday during the tournament?
Yeah, we had a flurry. We should go through it.
There really have been, and a trend that hadn't quite latched on yet, that hadn't quite hopped up into the next level yet, may just have done so yesterday. We'll get to it. Bernstein McKnight, 670 The Score.
Got some baseball talk coming up with Jonah Carey. We have been talking a lot of basketball, and following along the Score text line screen right now, which if you were playing toxic masculinity talking point bingo, you'd have the vertical, horizontal, diagonal, and full card. You would have it all there, all of the references to female body parts, all the references to wussification, all of the references to political correctness, all the references to manning up and growing a pair. It is you could imagine exactly what's
touch them all.
Yes.
Touch them all.
Mark it all on your card. But that's not why you called.
No, the contract extension to Paul Goldschmidt caught my eye yesterday amidst all of the Dos Equis at McGee's and all of the tournament at McGee's as well. It was a hell of a day. I stayed, here's the thing. Mac and Parkins, I guess, were talking about my afternoon a little bit, and I had a great one. It's a good old time.
Oh, good.
But I decided.
Remain upright?
Oh yeah, no, okay. stayed upright the entire. Okay. Well, there was a seat, a nice little perfect bar stool, and the spot at McGee's is great for tournaments. You just turn around and watch all the stuff, and the Dos Equis folks were wonderful to hang out with and watch a lot of basketball. But I told everybody, like, when the tournament got seated, that Marquette Murray State game was the one I wanted to watch most. Mm-hmm. I know it's crazy, right? I want to watch Ja Morant and Marcus Howard. How different? But that game started at 3:30. So by the time you and I finished, we'd had, probably 95 wings a person, something like that.
I had too many wings.
Yeah, it was a lot of wings. So I had to,
rub it in.
Had to get everything set after that. The White Sox are coming with a ton of food, Rick. You're going to be fine.
Yeah, chill out.
It's going to be a good day for you.
We should mention the I'm Fat podcast.
That's right.
March Fatness. You can
appreciate
go right now to 670thescore.com/March Fatness. It's all live. Games are going on. Be a part of it.
So as we finished up our wings and got ourselves set, I sat down and really just kind of got into the flow of things by about 2:30 or so. That game tipped at 3:30. I had to stay for the end of the Murray State Marquette game. Mm-hmm. Had to watch that thing all the way through. So I left about 6:30. It was a good time. But found some news throughout the afternoon. The Paul Goldschmidt extension that keeps him with the Giants. And that trade looks, rather the Cardinals. I don't know why I said the Giants. Keeps him with the Cardinals for 5 seasons. That trade for Paul Goldschmidt looks a hell of a lot better for the Cardinals now that they've got him for 5 years of control at $130 million. I was reading through Ken Rosenthal's piece on The Athletic. There have been 16 extensions this offseason covering playing time like this, buying out some free agent years. 4 of them have been for over $100 million. 2 that the Astros have made, 2 of those extensions, the Astros, Alex Bregman got $100 million, and Ryan Pressly got a 2-year deal for $17.5 million, so that doesn't count, obviously, for the big money. But now the rumor is that Gerrit Cole and Justin Verlander are the next two guys online for big-time contract extensions.
In line.
Well, they're on the line as well.
No, you're not from the East Coast.
The Astros are on the line with Gerrit Cole.
In line.
And Justin Verlander.
Just to argue with my college
anyway.
However it happened, he's a good caddy and a good kid. So they're sitting there with these monies, just trying to figure out what to do with it. These players that want some of the dollars. There have been an average of 14 extensions the past 3 seasons, but only one of them at $100 million. And we were talking a couple of weeks ago whether or not these extensions are in light of the fact that you've got a labor stoppage in 3 seasons, or in light of the fact that the money at the top end of the market is there, but the middle end of the market has been depressed. The worst thing you could be right now is an average baseball player right around 28, 29, 30 years old. That's kind of the worst thing to be in baseball right now. Without a settled contract. So now, whether you're Gerrit Cole at age 29 looking for an extension, Paul Goldschmidt at 31 headed to 32, I think at the end of the season, who got his contract extension, you are now seeing, I think, players looking for pretty good money, but not the big time money in terms of extensions. It's not to say that we haven't had some big ticket extensions signed.
It does give you the, when you look at it in totality, it gives you the sense of a flight to safety. It gives you the sense of players are not gambling on their future fortunes as they once were, because it's pretty clear how the shared valuations slash soft collusion have made teams' decisions on what it means to be 30.
The number of extensions this offseason hasn't yet outpaced, you know, like the 07-08 offseason or 11 or 2012, where you had a whole bunch of extensions signed. But it is kind of on the rise. It's on pace to exceed the average over the last couple of years. But it feels, in hearing from these free agents after they sign the deals, whether that's Luis Severino or Aaron Nola, who got terrifically under-market deals.
Blake Snell just finally got
the extension. Blake Snell got yesterday a five-year deal for $50 million, which, you know, for a pitcher, that changes some of the valuation a little bit. He's one pitch away from his arm falling off. Every pitcher is, so that changes the number some. But it really does feel as though there is an extra force acting on these players that hasn't been around the last season or two. And you wonder, with about a week left to go until opening day, just how many more extensions the teams and agents are willing to reach. Because if this does, if it's Cole, if it's Verlander, if it's two or three players, one of them perhaps on the Cubs that reach these extensions, you really start to see something that looks more and more like a league-wide trend with a couple of forces acting on it. Whether that's good or bad for the league, that's yet to be seen.
The games are about to get started, the Friday tournament games. They're on the court warming up in various venues. And if you want to find your place to go watch it all today, it's Draft Picks in Naperville. McNeil and Matt Spiegel on the McNeil and Parkins are going to be at Draft Picks in Naperville from 1 to 6 for the Miller Lite What's on Tap broadcast. Find out what's on tap in college hoops. Enjoy Miller Lite specials. Enter for your chance to win $200. Brought to you by Miller Lite. Hold true. Jonah Carey will talk baseball with us. And at some point, we do have to mention, we can now announce our lineup for our baseball contributors.
We've got it set.
Yeah, one thing I will tell you is get used to Jonah Carey on Fridays.
It'll be fun.
He's back in once again. He is going to be part of our regular rotation. We got to mention our Jeff Sullivan replacement, too.
That's right.
And we're going to do that at some point today. Bernstein and McKnight on the score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station. Jonah Carey.
Yeah, great to see you.
Me too. I don't know who you are, but it's great to see.
The Athletic and the Jonah Carey Podcast.
He's thrown his pillow, he's thrown his nightcap, and Yuppie's been thrown out of the ball game.
Tim Raines, enthusiast.
Tim Raines, yeah! Welcome to the Hall of Fame. Tim was rock solid playing.
Is that right?
Jonah Carey with Bernstein and McKnight on the score.
Jonah Carey's on Twitter at Jonah Carey. He writes for The Athletic. He talks on the Jonah Carey podcast and with us on the Bernstein and McKnight show. He will be part of our 2019 baseball coverage as he was part of the 2018 baseball coverage. He's with us on the Alpamonte Ford hotline. Alpamonte Ford, 500 new and used vehicles to choose from. Hello, Jonah. How are you?
And a free four to every regular guest. That's very exciting. Thanks, fellas.
Yeah. Yes, it's a promotion we're happy to run. Thank you for that.
On the radio as we speak. The news of the week here locally was the extension of Eloy Jimenez by the Chicago White Sox. Mm-hmm. It could be up to $77 million for 8 years for a guy who's never played Major League Baseball. And still, consensus is way to go, White Sox. Do you agree?
Well, yeah, and it's a perfect time to talk about this. I just released my MLB trade value rankings at The Athletic, and what that really does is it takes every player in baseball. I went to all 30 rosters, major league rosters, and then the minor leagues, anybody affiliated with an organization, and said, how much value does this guy have? So it has to do with ability and numbers, obviously. But then you look at age, you look at how many years you can control the guy, you look at health, and you put it all in the blender. And what you find when you talk to executives within the game, you know, I asked them about Mike Trout, for instance, the $430 million contract. Mike Trout didn't make the top 50. Mike Trout is unquestionably the best player in the world, but he's making $430 million, and there aren't that many teams that would, you know, pay a premium for that. Whereas if you look at somebody like Ronald Acuna or Juan Soto, who have less than 1 year of service time, but were so awesome that first year, spoiler alert, those guys are very close to the top. So then you get to a guy like Jimenez, who doesn't quite have the track record that Soto and Acuna have, which is very minimal to begin with. He has nothing, really. So you're going by projection. But that's the point. That's what scouts get paid for. That's what stat heads get paid for. is to be able to project guys. And long ago we found that you can usually project minor league performance as long as you take into account age and all that stuff. And by those standards, Jimenez is projected to be a multi-time All-Star. So if you consider that, and you consider that he's going to be controllable for 6 years and now maybe 8 years, then yes, he becomes a very, very valuable commodity. He was valuable before the contract extension. He's still valuable after the contract extension.
We spent the whole offseason, Jonah, talking about the health of the baseball marketplace and trying to assess it with each and every multi-million dollar contract that was signed. Probably not the smartest way to go about things, but we do a show every day, so that's kind of where we're at. I wonder if more contracts like Jimenez's, whether it's to a guy that literally has not played in Major League Baseball or has just played maybe just a touch, would that be a shot in the arm for the labor relations? Would that be something that might just fix things 3 years from now?
Well, I mean, here's the thing. Baseball salary structure is pretty arcane. It was set up years ago. You know, Marvin Miller, of course, there was no salary structure before. It was everybody was chattel, and you had to belong to your team, and you had no negotiating rights whatsoever. So they changed it. They made it that the first few years, you know, we were basically making nothing about the league minimum. Then you get to arbitration, then it starts to get interesting.
Yeah.
And what's happened now is teams have realized the players are peaking around age 25, which is when they're very much controllable. And by the time they get to free agency, they might be 28 or 29, and they might have already passed their prime. So teams get to have it both ways. They're not spending money for free agents other than the premium free agents. You know, the middle guys are not going for. And then on the front end, they don't have to pay anybody anything. Blake Snell was not happy, and other people were not happy on his behalf, the defending Cy Young Award winner, when he won the Cy Young and then got a 2% raise to basically just over the league minimum. Now, they subsequently signed him to a $50 million extension. But that $50 million extension is below market value. If Blake Snell went out on the open market right now, he'd make easily nine figures, no question about it. So you look at somebody like Jimenez, and it's the same sort of thing. Yes, he doesn't have to make $500K now in his first season. That's wonderful. But at the same time, if Jimenez was a free agent and could just bargain his rights and shop his rights anywhere, he would make way more than $77 million over 8 years, even though he's not played a single game. So it's good in some sense. I mean, at least his team's stepping up to the plate with some good gesture. But the bottom line is that the system itself is fundamentally flawed. That's what needs to change. And that's a tough nut to crack because, you know, the players have nothing they can bargain with. They can't be like, okay, we'll let you have a pitch clock and you give us way, way, way more money. That's not going to happen. It's going to be the kind of thing that, unfortunately, might have to be resolved with some tension and, dare I say, maybe even with a labor stoppage. Because right now, as I said, teams are playing in on both ends and players are still getting squeezed.
Been thinking a lot about Ichiro after we got to watch him walk off the field, and that's a player who, when he came along in 2001, I believe, it's all kinds of debate about what he was and what he was going to be. And for me, he's part of a larger picture in my mind. And give me a little latitude here, Jonah, but sports at the highest level are homogenizing because of understood best practices. Because of coaching, because of video cameras, because of YouTube, our tiny, tiny little world, and YouTube sanding down the edges, we don't have siloed development of, say, somebody on a course who swings a club like Lee Trevino on the same course with Arnold Palmer and his helicopter finish. All these kids come out of the SEC with all the same swing. Baseball players look the same. Pitchers' motions look the same. This is just how you do it now. We're not going to see Adrian Dantley on a basketball court ever again. Goalies. Look at butterfly goalies. They're all 6'2", and if they're all wearing the same uniform, could you really tell one from the other? I think you're lying if you say you could. And Ichiro, I see Ichiro as one of the last of a sui generis, high-level professional athletes doing something in a way, all of his in-between pitches, the stretches, the swing, the style of game, the approach, that I'm lamenting the fact that it's an individual kind of player that we see so few of.
First of all, boy, do I love this discussion. I'm almost certainly going to write about it, and I'm definitely, if I write about it, going to credit you because this is phenomenal. And when you said Adrian Dantley, I can't tell you how tickled that was. Adrian Dantley, for people who don't know, was about 6'3.5" and used to post people up and score 30 a game.
Yep.
There's no such thing as that anymore. All of that, absolutely true. It's funny, you know, the other guy who's in the spotlight right now is right at the beginning of his career in the spotlight, which is Zion Williamson. And he is also sui generis in that he's 6'7", 285. You know, LeBron was sort of like, okay, wow, here comes a big guy who could do crazy stuff. But Zion is even beyond that. I mean, that's what makes, he just his body type and everything is amazing. And with Ichiro, it is body type to a certain extent. I mean, he's a little guy, but it's also his preparation. And so I imagine that's where you might see, you know, it's going to be one of two things, right? It's either going to be genetics like Zion, or it's going to be somebody who just decides to do things very differently for one reason or another. You know, in some ways, Trevor Bauer was a little bit ahead of his time in that he was looking at biometrics and all this stuff, and he was trying to gain an advantage. But by the time Trevor Bauer really became an ace-caliber pitcher, well, gee, now everybody has Kinitrax and Rapsodo and everything else, on top of, you know, the great article in The Athletic today about, you know, ways that you can really sense things in people's bodies. You know, everything, biometrics, all that stuff is happening. And so Bauer was ahead of the curve, but people caught up in a hurry. But you can't really catch up to a Zion Williamson. And in some ways, I'm not sure you can catch up to an Ichiro, too, because he just doesn't care. He doesn't care that everybody's three true outcomes anymore. His skill set is George Sisler. For people who don't know who George Sisler is, he was the single-season hits leader until Ichiro. You know, the kind of guy who just hit singles, and that was a really effective strategy back in the day, and now people just frown on that. So all of that is true. I think you're right, and you're right that that's a great loss to the sport because, I mean, how many of us love Ichiro, love Zion Williamson, right? We want things that are not only good, but are different. That's what makes sports so much fun.
That's why I loved Tim Lincecum for some reason.
Oh, and
I realized it was because he's not supposed to be doing this, and his preparation maxed out whatever he had for as long as he could have it.
I think that's right. You know, and we were all kind of lamenting, oh, this is the end of Lincecum. But, gee, we should be thankful that he came along in the first place. And, by the way, I'll throw Pedro Martinez in there, too.
Fair enough.
I mean, I don't think he didn't have the same mechanics, per se. But when he came into the league, he weighed 146 pounds, dude. This is not your big, strong right-hander. This is not Roger Clemens. And, in fact, Tommy Lasorda thought so little of him that because the Dodgers whiffed on Jody Reed in free agency, they traded Pedro Martinez for, at the time, a pretty good player in Lionel DeShields. But it became one of the most one-sided trades in baseball history because Tommy Lasorda did not recognize a sui generis player when he saw one.
You know, and if you plan on writing this kind of thing too, and I could talk all day on it. We had Dana White on from UFC.
That's right.
And It came up with him too, where that was an entire sport built around the idea of one style pitted against another style of like a Hoist Gracie Brazilian jiu-jitsu artist against a sumo wrestler. I mean, video game kind of stuff here. And now there's even sort of an accepted way to fight MMA. It's evolved. They've figured it out. You don't have these vast differences of styles anymore because it's the same thing. People know better. People know there's an optimized way to do it.
This is seriously one of the five best story ideas I've heard in the last little while. So, yes, this is going to have to be explored. I totally agree. And I remember MMA in the early days, too, and I thought it was, you know, Ken Shamrock was in the ring and you had a guy practicing Brazilian jiu-jitsu. Like, Shamrock was just this big, strong bruiser, and you would get somebody in different. Now, not it's weight class. I mean, it's everything is homogenized. So, yeah, no, all of that for sure.
Jonah, run with it. Enjoy yourself and give us a call before you publish the thing. We got first dibs.
You can absolutely have first dibs, and I might talk to you off air about this, too. I appreciate it. Thank you, guys.
Very cool. That is Jonah Carey.
Part of our regular baseball coverage all season long.
Yeah, when do you want to unveil the...
Can we do it right before the Midday Midway?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's do it before the Midday Midway.
Okay, sounds like a great idea. And the Midday Midway is coming up. Also, I have a guy who had things in his house he probably shouldn't have had in his house. And I want you to think, what do you think are America's favorite drunk snacks?
Oh, I've got that list.
And I've got an awesome Florida story that's just going to Florida all over everything.
I also have a Florida story. I hope it's not the same thing, but we shall see.
Does it involve a dispute?
Ooh, no, it's different. Okay. A different Florida story. Okay. Also, a new position in football has been invented, and we will get to it. It's the Midday Midway on the way. Bernstein and McKnight, 670 The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.